Siamo i batteristi non pensiero. Presta casa per Sant'Ampero.
Hey everybody, welcome into another edition of Swiss Pats. I am Don Delco. Joining me as always is Susie Lyon. How you doing, Susie?
Hello.
So, once again, you could find us at SwissPats.com. Head on over there. We have all our podcasts. Leave a comment. Listen to some past episodes, some past interviews. We've had some good ones. Coming up later in the show, we have Constanza Lizdero, and she is with Chi Running.
Run with Constanza, yep.
Yes. So
check Chai is tea.
Chai is tea, that's right.
Chi is running.
Yeah. Chi Running. Anyway, we had a great talk with her about if you don't think you are a runner, listen to this interview and you might be like, you know what?
Maybe I am. Yeah.
Anyway, you can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/SwissPats, on Instagram at SwissPats, on Twitter at SwissPatsPod, and most importantly at SwissPats.com and Apple Podcasts. So with that out of the way, and before we get to Constanza, what's going on, Susie? What do you have?
Well, I had a little bit of a dilemma this week. Now, as you might not know this actually, but Australia doesn't really have like a tip-in, what's it called, like thing. We don't really tip in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
So, and also I was 18 when I left. So even if there is tipping, I don't know about it because I wasn't there. Then in England as well, you know, like you tip at the restaurant and that's kind of really it.
But you tip just a few,
just
right?
Like, yeah, like you round up. So, and that's kind of the same here. But I was at the hairdresser's and I'm sitting in the chair and I realized probably for the first time ever while sitting in the hairdresser, I have no idea if I'm supposed to tip a hairdresser. So, like, I'm having this crisis in my mind because I'm like, well, I've never tipped a hairdresser, but what if I'm supposed to have tipped a hairdresser? So, what do you think? Do you tip a hairdresser?
Do you go to the same one every time?
Well, like the current one I'm using, I do. Okay. Until I get a new one.
Gotcha. So I get my hair done about once every 3 weeks, and
God, you're more high maintenance than anyone I know.
Yeah, I'm pretty high maintenance. Have you met me? Yeah, I'm high maintenance. Oh, so I have noticed I never pay with cash. I always pay with card.
Hoity-toity.
But I have noticed some guys slip the girls, like, you know, maybe a 5-franc
like a $1 American bill.
Like. Yeah, here you go, honey. No, like a 5-franc coin or something. Right. I've seen that.
Okay.
But I don't tip. I just got the kids' haircut on like last Thursday, and I didn't tip the girls.
So
I mean, it was already $50.
It does feel like it's a lot, so why do we tip? What about Uber drivers? Because then I got in an Uber and then I was like, someone told me when I went to America, I tipped the Uber driver in San Francisco. Turned out I tipped in 50% tip, but that's beside the point. I was told that I don't need to tip Uber drivers, but then I was like, but I would tip a taxi driver, so why wouldn't you tip an Uber driver?
So I think the tipping of an Uber driver has recently come into more of a prevalence. I know we also have something called Lyft, which is like, for examples, in Chicago. When I was there, I was talking to the Lyft driver, and it works just like Uber, but they have an option even on the app to leave a tip.
Oh, they can like click it and like leave a tip.
Right. Now, I haven't done Uber since last time I was back in the States, which was like 6 months ago. So I don't know. I did hear that Uber might be doing that. But if it's really that good, or maybe he helps you with some bags, or he's really that nice, or he just shuts up and drives and doesn't talk to you, which
well,
is my favorite.
Choose the music, which is my favorite.
There you go.
And then turn it up loud. And then doesn't tell me to shut up when I sing.
Yeah.
That's someone who deserves a tip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe slip them a fiver or something.
Well, the reason I ask as well, because I did have this inquiry in my mind while sitting at the hairdresser's.
So what'd you end up doing?
I did. I tipped her, but I tipped her like it was 90. I gave her 100.
Okay.
Which feels like a lot, but.
No. I think that's kind of like what you're saying, like rounding up. In a restaurant. It's kind of what you did. It's 10 francs. I mean, if you liked it, I can't tell right now.
No, you can't. No one can tell because I had the smallest amount of hair cut off. Like, okay. Probably you've had more hair cut off when you went to the hairdresser than I did the last time I went. I literally got this, like, a centimeter.
And it cost you 90 francs.
Yeah, yes. Welcome to Switzerland.
Oh, my God.
But, so I found this really great kebab shop in town. It's absolutely delicious. They make fresh falafel. It's called The Kebab Shop.
Fitting.
And it's a new place, and it's absolutely delicious. And I've eaten there, like, 4 times in the last 3 weeks. It is so good that I do think that next time I go, I will leave a tip, but probably not as much as this lady who, she went to a kebab shop, not the kebab shop, just a kebab shop, in Zurich, and she went to pay her 24-franc bill and accidentally left 7,686 francs as a tip. She did it by accident.
Oh, wow. And how do you do that by accident?
Good question. And the newspaper that gave me this information has conveniently also not only told us about this lovely story, but provided us with this lady's PIN number because she paid on her card, just mm-hmm. like you. And instead of putting in the payment, which I guess was the kebab shop's job, she typed in her PIN code, which is 7686. So if you're looking for Olesa Shamyakova, then now you know her PIN number, 7686. So she put that in, and I guess she put it in twice so that then it was approved, and the kebab shop got
7,600
francs. But she didn't know until a month later when she got a credit card bill.
When you use your... Some places, when you use it, like especially like a debit card, it'll say tip ? And then you could put in, you know, your tip.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's where she put it. Hit okay.
And then it'll ask you your PIN number. And then you put in your PIN number and hit okay.
She definitely would have had to put it in twice. But she did not realize until literally she got her credit card bill in a month. I mean, why would you if you didn't know you were doing it?
So... Is she just screwed?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, it's not a crime. No crime has been committed. So it's not fraud.
But the shop's going to keep the $7,000 tip?
Well, they say they're not, but they were very hard to get a hold of from, according to this newspaper article. They weren't in a rush to get back to the lady that lost her money or the newspaper that was trying to investigate.
Here's all I got to say for that shop. Karma is a bitch. And if you don't give that money back, karma will get you.
So didn't get a hold of the owner, got a hold of the brother of the owner. And they have promised the money will be returned. So it's like me promising that you'll pay something back. they're under no obligation by law to pay it back, but it was a mistake. I really hope that they do. But
they're not.
The credit card company won't do anything because it's not fraud. The police can't do anything because it's not fraud. Like, it seems like, if you went into, I don't know, Co-op and you accidentally paid 8,000 francs instead of 8 francs, I'm pretty sure Co-op would give the money back if you called them.
Hope so, yeah. I just,
can you imagine? Like, nope, sorry, just keeping your money.
That makes my stomach upset. I can't, a poor woman.
And she's unemployed as well, so she...
Oh, come on, really?
So maybe I'll reach out to her and have her on the show.
Oh, dear. This shop, we got to stick with this story because this shop better give her damn money back.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? But hopefully there's that promise there and hopefully it's not an empty one, so... I mean, imagine what she could have bought instead of just 24 francs worth of kebabs.
You know what the real shitty thing is? Is this they must have known at the end of the night when they were looking at, you know, all their receipts and everything. They were like, this lady gave us a $7,600 tip.
Yeah. I wonder how they divide that up.
And they didn't call this woman. I guess how would they? Well, they would have her name. On the credit card receipt?
Well, they could call the bank.
they could call a bait. They
there's something that you could.
They could have done something, and they just kind of sat on it, which is.
Now, this is true about me, and it's happened before. If I ever find money on the ground, or, you know, sometimes there's like the, I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but like the, someone will take cash out of the ATM, but forget to take the money.
No. So
that's never happened to you. That's like, happens a lot. Well, it happens to a lot of people I know. Maybe they're forgetful.
Maybe.
But I will never take cash that didn't belong to me. I view it as a crime, like you're taking something that doesn't belong to you, knowing that it doesn't belong to you. So I stand by that. And I have found money on the ground. I was at a food festival or something, and there was a line, and there was 50 francs on the ground. And I assumed it was the ladies in front of me, so I tapped on her shoulder and I gave it to her, and she took it. So I assume it was hers. Hopefully it was.
I'm cynical. It definitely wasn't. But she was like, yeah, that's mine. But you know what? You passed the bad juju from you to her.
Well, it wasn't. I don't see it as bad juju. I see it as like good.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying like is, you know, you take that 50, you slip in your pocket, nobody would know. That's bad juju. That's bad karma.
Yeah. No, I don't. There's lots of bad things that I will do. There's lots of illegal things that I would do as well. But just keeping money that doesn't belong to me is not one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and if my kids find like 5 wrapping on the ground, I'm like, make sure that it doesn't belong to anyone around before you claim it. Like, as long as you look around, there's not someone who's looking, you know, who's got their wallet in their hand or like looking around for their lost money, then you can keep it.
That's fair.
Yeah, I stand by it. I'm a strong believer in not keeping money that doesn't belong to you.
On the long list of crimes to be committed, that is on the no column for you.
Yeah, like I'd go for a joyride in a stolen car, but... Yeah, drop a tenner and not mine.
Sure. It's fair.
But another man actually has recently lost some money, but a different kind of money. A man in Lucerne, I believe. Yes, in Lucerne. He went shopping with his laptop, as you do. And on his laptop was 80,000 francs worth of Bitcoin or cryptocurrency. And he lost it.
He lost the laptop.
He lost the laptop, and he has no way to get that 80,000 francs worth of cryptocurrency because he doesn't have it on another hardware device. So his wallets, his, you know, web wallets, I guess, I don't know the technical term for that, were all on this laptop that he misplaced. And he doesn't know if he like left it on the ground near his car or left it at Migros or left it on the bus seats, or like he has no idea where he left it, and he literally cannot, this is not money that he can get back.
Okay, I got a lot of problems with this story. I am not feeling the same empathy as I did in the previous story for this fella.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Here's one. I have a laptop. We're using it right now. Whenever I take this anywhere outside my home, I know where it is at all times.
Yeah, you would as well if it was worth 80,000
right
francs. Like, that's a lot of money.
Two, you don't have a backup of $80,000 worth of cryptocurrency?
But that's the whole point with cryptocurrency, that it's not supposed to be like everywhere.
Well, okay, let's take a step back. I don't know jack shit about cryptocurrency.
I know the tiniest bit. I have a very, very, I don't have 800,000 francs of cryptocurrency. I have 10 francs of cryptocurrency.
Okay, I've heard of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's a cryptocurrency, right? They're
cryptocurrencies,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you buy the cryptocurrency and it is kept on, it's kept inside a wallet, which is on either your phone or your laptop. And then you need a special code to retrieve that. And only you should have that code. But then that wallet that is on your laptop or phone is then not everywhere. Like you don't just, it's not like an app where you can access it anywhere.
I see. That's why this guy's screwed.
Yes, because it's only on his laptop. And he also doesn't know his code either. So there probably is ways that he could get it back if he knew those codes, but he doesn't. So his hardware wallet was just on his laptop. So he's offering a 40,000 franc reward though. So if you do find his bag in Lucerne. It was a bag that had a laptop in it. And if you found it, then you could get $40,000. So, I mean, it's got a Lion Food logo on it. So if you saw that bag, then quid's in or Frank's in.
Is that a Aussie thing you just dropped on me?
Quid's in is a British thing.
British thing. Figure
it means payday.
Quid's in. Because quid's is a nickname for...
Yeah, for pounds. So if you find his laptop, then if you're smart with computers, then you're 800,000 franc richer and you have no problem with the bad juju, as you say. Or you give it back and you get 40,000 francs. So I think that is interesting that you don't feel as bad for him. Like that's just as... It's real money as well. It's just in a different way. It's a new currency.
Right, but he doesn't know his code. He doesn't know exactly where he lost his laptop. Like, how do you...
My problem with this whole thing is when I hear about these large amounts of money going missing, if I have 100 francs on me, I'm like, where's my wallet?
Oh, yeah.
And these people are carrying around hundreds of thousands of francs and like, oh, I left it on the tram. Like, that happened in Basel a couple of years ago. Some couple went and got out like 130,000 francs from their bank to buy a house. Why they couldn't do it with their bank, I don't know. And they left it on the tram. Someone found it and handed it in. They got their money back. Like,
it's just a... Yeah, to me, that's just the next level.
How can you carry around 100,000 francs in actual notes and not hold on to it with your life?
I don't know how I would walk because my butthole would be so tight carrying $100,000.
I was going to say, it's only like this much. It's like it's literally like an inch worth of notes because they probably
that's right,
have.
Yeah.
They probably have special 100,000 franc notes that we don't know about.
But good God, like, can you imagine, like, I mean, you tried on a $1.2 million ring and you freaked out.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like $100,000 and you're... No.
So I feel bad for this guy because, you know, that was his money. He paid for that with his real money and he had cryptocurrency, but he was an idiot. Like, I mean, his name's Thomas. Thomas, seriously, hang on to your stuff.
Yeah, pull together, bud.
I do find it when people lose things super annoying. I'm like, just hold on to your things.
I know.
Please stop putting things down and then misplacing them. You are crazy. You're driving me mad.
Have you found your iPad yet?
Oh, moving on. Yeah. No, I haven't actually.
No?
If anyone's seen a pink iPad, SusieLion.com.
SusieLion.com.
I have no idea what would happen if you went to that website, but there you go.
And those Foo Fighter tickets?
Oh, crap. Yeah, I've lost a few things, haven't I? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, I find myself annoying as well. The thing is I've lost these things in my house. It's still annoying. Yeah. All right. I'm just as bad as the people losing their money on the tram. I apologize.
No, it's still $100,000. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We're talking about an iPad and tickets. Like that. Tickets can be easily misplaced. I could understand that.
Yeah.
iPad, I can understand that too.
Well, I don't lose money.
No, you spend it.
Yeah. So technically I do lose it.
It doesn't stay long.
Where's all my money gone, my husband says? I don't know. I must have lost it. Maybe I left it on the tram.
I think I lost it at Manor today.
Exactly. Okay, so we do have a guest, and I think now would be a good time to introduce her.
Take the heat off you. I like
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Got to move on from this losing things and start running away from this hot topic. So Costanza Lizero came and had a chat with us. She is the owner of Run with Costanza, and she does something called She Running, and she came and told us what that is because I had no idea. So without further ado, let's give it up for Costanza. Yodley. Okay, and today we have Costanza Lizero from Chi Running, and welcome, Costanza. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I had a look on your website because I'm not a runner, so I had to Google everything about you. But you actually say something really interesting. Before we get into what Chi Running is, you say, movement is the key to a happy, productive, long life. But honestly, when I'm doing yoga, the only time I'm happy is when I'm lying down. So I'm obviously missing something because the idea of movement kind of freaks me out. So explain to us what qi running is.
Well, qi running is a running technique that is nothing esoteric. It's just getting people to run or to move the way we were designed to move. So it's the way kids move, the way people that never stopped moving move, like Kenyans or African runners. So it's just becoming more efficient. When you become more efficient, you have less chances, first of getting injured, and then you increase your joy. Because that most people do any exercise, and they think that exercise, if it's excuse me, if it's good, it has to be like almost like a suffering. If I didn't suffer, it wasn't good enough. And then it's very difficult then for you to go and do it again. So my idea of movement and exercise is to do it out of pleasure and joy so that you stay active and you stay healthy and you can do it without thinking that you're going through torture.
Because you do see some runners sometimes, I think, Don, you'd agree, where like they actually look really happy. So
yeah,
that's something I always wonder, like why are they happy?
Well, there's two happy runners, the ones that enjoy torture.
Yeah.
And the ones that actually do it out of pleasure. And you can do running as if you were doing a moving meditation.
Ah,
so
I see.
It's connecting with your body. That's the qi.
Right.
Connecting with your body, connecting with your outdoors, and then trying to do it in a more harmonic way. And forgetting, we as humans, or nature, doesn't do anything with effort. No, plants grow and animals reproduce, and we humans are the ones that we think that effort is something that drives us somewhere, right? That is what we should do, effort to work, effort to run, effort to... And I think that if we did it more effortless, it would be more in accordance with our biology.
So you have quite an interesting story that led you from the beginning to all the way to where you are now. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I am a researcher. So I have a PhD in biology, did many years of research, and then started having kids and moving around the world. And so I had to recreate myself. And I was always active, but I was this type of runner that I would run like 3 times a week, half an hour. Or 5 kilometers, that was my top. If I did 6 kilometers or 35 minutes, I would fall apart. And even for me, running 50 minutes was as if anybody would like be, oh, you're running a marathon. For me, it was this ridiculous amount of time and my body just couldn't do it. And I thought that the world was divided into people that could run and people that could not run. And I was in the ones that couldn't run. It was genetics, it was, I don't know, mental state, it was something. I don't know, I didn't really know what. Until one day, and the same happened to me with swimming, which is a funny thing. I couldn't swim. I had learned how to swim as a kid, but I could never do more than 10 meters without feeling that I was drowning.
Yeah, that's like me.
Yeah, so out of the blue, I'm like, you know, I'm going to take swimming lessons. So I get adult swimming lessons. And in eight classes of half an hour, they teach me everything. It was a super coach, a Russian guy back in the US. And so swimming is all about mechanics, about flowing, about relaxing. And speed and performance is an afterthought. Once you get the mechanics right and the relaxation run, then speed comes. And I became a swimmer, and not an Olympic type swimmer, but I joined the team. I could do 100 meters in 1:25, which,
ooh, that's impressive.
Is not Olympic, but for a woman, 40-year-old woman that had just learned how to do the strokes was good. And then after I became a good swimmer, I went like, okay, maybe running is the same. Maybe it's not that I cannot run, but I just don't know how to. And if somebody told me where to put my legs, my arms, what to think, how to put my head, then I can do it. So I Googled, like the famous Google. Okay, good running mechanics, good this, good that. And I found this little video of this qi running website of effortless, run without using your legs, relaxation, using gravity. And I was like, I need to try this. It was a Wednesday. And then on the Saturday, there was a workshop, 2.5-hour drive from my home in Boston. So it was in Maine. And I was like, I need to do this. I phoned a neighbor, let's do it. Yeah, sure, let's go learn how to run. And learning how to run, people think that running is this thing that you just have to go out and do it, right? It's about motivation, not about knowing what to do. And I did this first workshop, that is what I do currently here. And it was amazing. I was like blown. My brain was like, wow, I can actually run without using my legs. And so that's how I became a runner. I did my marathons and then I did triathlons, and all my friends that knew me growing up in Argentina were like, what? You do anything that has to do with fitness? Like, you are the laziest non-runner, non-athletic person we'd had ever met. And so, yeah, I now teach people how to run, teach people how to move, and not quite the swimming I cannot teach, but yeah, that's my story.
So this wasn't something that you did at an early age, as far as the running and swimming, and it's not something that
in my 40s.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So anybody can learn how to do new things, even when you're 40, 50, I don't know. There's no limit to learning. And that's something that also I like because it's getting adults the chance to learn something new. And we think that only kids, you know, we put our kids through a million camps and things and they learn tennis and this and that. And we adults are like, okay, what have you learned? You've learned. And then you can become a marathon runner. The oldest marathon runner is 100 years old.
Whoa.
Now let me ask you this. Let me kind of pull it and correlate it to being an expat. So you mentioned you lived in Boston, you're from Argentina, you're now in Switzerland. To just go to one day and say, all right, I'm gonna go to this chi running and learn how to run, right?
Yes.
That takes guts. Okay? It does.
Yes.
A lot of people would agree.
It takes a decision.
Have to have some guts.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that also moving away from your home, moving to a country where you don't speak the language, also takes guts. So I see a correlation. I don't know if you guys do, but I see a correlation between someone who is up to moving different places, who is interested in, you know, living somewhere else that's not quote unquote home, to someone waking up and saying, I want to learn how to run, or I want to be a better swimmer. Like, that takes guts, right? Is there is a correlation, or am I just...
I think there is, because I think that once you get out of your comfort zone, that is home for me, and I left 16 years ago from Buenos Aires to Boston and then moved around the world. It's true, you get on a place where you start thinking, oh, I can do anything I want.
Yeah.
And you meet new people, and you meet people that are running marathons. My friends from school, we were not runners. We were just, you know, girls having a good time, but never in exposed to any of these, like, no. And then when you start moving and seeing new people, and then you start realizing that you can do really have all the potential to. And when you move from one place to the other, it's a good chance to kind of recreate yourself a little bit and explore this other part of you that you didn't in your hometown or in this town. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree too. The you do have to sometimes, as an expat, kind of find yourself sometimes, and you've obviously found that thing that you can now do anywhere in the world.
Yes, that's a really nice feeling to know that I carry with me this backpack of things that I just need a nice sunny day, or a gym, or just people. And you know, usually people come to me. Runners, it's difficult to get them anyone. To learn a new thing, you have to have a motivation. So most people that come to me come either because they want to perform better or because they've never run in their life, and they see people here. You see people running all the
time.
And we have these beautiful places. We have the Alcheville. We have the forests in France and in Germany, everywhere. Or they come with me from injury. Somebody that performs, and most runners are injured at least 30% of the time. People that run, you know, kind of run a lot. And so many of those injuries can be prevented if you just know how to make your running more efficient. And so I'm fascinating with teaching all, you know, in one workshop, I'd have the person that never run in their lives. And weekend, the Ironman guy that is trying to run a better marathon after having swam and biked forever.
Oh my gosh. So you touched on something at the beginning of what you said there about motivation, and I wanted to ask you about the kind of attitude that you would need, because Don has seen me run once, and literally my knees gave out. Now, it definitely was my knees and not the alcohol that I'd been drinking before.
We were leaving a pub and
I ran for the tram.
You didn't run long until she
face planted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I see, like, I think about, like, that, that, you know, my knees did give out despite what Don saw. And I think about my knees. I think, oh, you know, I don't know if I would have the motivation to run. But it sounds like, you know, you're giving people the motivation, and it's just about coming in with the right attitude, it seems.
It's coming in with the right attitude, and then to learn mechanically what you should do to reduce the impact on your knees.
Yeah.
And running is not a leg exercise. Many people think that running is with the legs. Running is a core exercise. So as soon as you can work your core, you get more stable, and you get your big core muscles to be the muscles that lift up your ankles and not your actual legs. Running with your legs is what Usain Bolt does, is sprinting, is associated with stress and flight-fight response. Whereas running long distance is associated with relaxation. The sprint, you only get energy, these big muscles of your leg that fire, and you see the legs of Usain Bolt, they're these huge, massive, muscle-powerful things. Then you go to the 200-meter guy, 400-meter guy, and then as you get to the distance people, then distance people don't have muscle at all. So the load of work goes from your leg to your core when you run distance. And so you have to do it from a relaxation point of view, which for many people is very difficult. Many people run with the motivation of, I'm going to vent, I had a really bad day at work, and I want to like get all this energy, and if I don't sweat enough, and if I don't suffer enough, it wasn't worth it. So I propose a different model. Like, let's change this chip of
painful
exercise, and the only exercise that is good for me is the one that I've suffered through, that I've sweated through. And then the next day you have to do it. You're like, oh, I have to go again to my friends with body pump. Oh, I have to go again to body pump. They've been sore for 3 days.
Oh, geez.
What if you could exercise and not be sore at all, and connect with your body and connect with the environment, and do it from a relaxation? So you go out to your run, and when you come back, you
feel good.
You feel better, not because you just went through the torture and survived, but because you're more connected, as if you had just done a meditation.
That sounds pretty good. Sounds exactly how I want to do it. No pain.
No pain. Yeah. Exactly. No pain.
So you run workshops, and there, I saw on your website that there's one coming up in the spring called Original Strength, which I have none of. So you're going to have to tell me what that is and see if it's something that I can get involved in.
Yes. Well, Original Strength is a fascinating... a movement restoration system. So it starts from the basis that when babies are born, we're born with a head that is huge. It's like a watermelon.
My son's head.
It's 30% of their body weight is massive.
And yeah, so I remember.
One of the first things a baby has to do is control this head. And the way we control their heads, the kids start moving their heads using their eyes. Something draws their attention. Their eyes looks. Their head comes. So the eyes brings the head. And then the head brings the body, and this is the dangerous parts of babies when they start rolling around. But all these movements that babies do for the first 2 years of life, the movement initiated with your eyes, and also very important, their belly breathing.
Oh, my Roomba just started.
We got a Roomba going.
I'm sorry.
No problem. Their belly breathing, so the diaphragmatic breathing that most adults we lose because we start having this emergency chest breathing because we have lives full of stress. So all these things that the babies do prepare the baby to be mobile. And the way it prepares the baby to be mobile, it activates a core in a reflexive way. A little baby that stands up at 1 year of age doesn't need to be told where the shoulder has to be aligned with the hip. And they're just straight, and their body is exactly well balanced over their feet. Then we adults, we all move the wrong way. Our hips are ahead of our shoulders most of the time, and we have weakened cores. So all the Original Strength is a series of, they're called primal movement patterns. So we start doing the movements that babies did. So people on the floor breathing with their bellies, moving their head with their eyes. So people that wear glasses don't move their eyes to move their heads anymore, because if your eye goes too far away from the glass, you don't focus, right? Mm-hmm. So we start not moving our eyes. Now with our new cars, we don't even have to turn around to do reverse.
Sure.
So we don't twist and turn. We don't look back. So we lose a lot of mobility. And what we don't use, we lose. That's the way our body works. And neuronal pathways really, unless it's been exercised, it disappears. And it takes a long time to reestablish those neuronal pathways that gets you to move in the right way. And in the right way means with your reflexive strength there. Reflexive strength is what anticipates movement. So when you go for a run, you don't have to think of engaging your core. Your core does it by itself. Or when a baby starts crawling, you know, the gait pattern, right leg, left arm, and the cross of which how you move your arms and a cross
it's
with
automatic,
your legs.
Yeah.
That is automatic and is a reflex. And many adults lose it. So original strength is a nice way of getting people to, when you're an athlete, to perform better because you restore your reflexive strength that you use, or whether you're a person that never moves, or whether you're somebody recovering from an injury, or you're somebody recovering from a stroke. And there's been also incredible effects with people with cerebral palsy that they get to do these movements, and they get people that have never walked in their lives to be able to crawl on the floor. So it's very powerful, and it's all pleasure. It's like almost no effort. We do a lot of rolling on the floor.
Sounds perfect. Sounds exactly what I would like.
Yeah.
Does it help? Does original strength have anything to do with helping with posture?
Exactly. Yes. As when you engage and trigger your reflexive posture reflex. So babies don't need to be reminded how to stand or sit in a right posture. If a baby sits a little bit with their head not exactly above their shoulders, they plop, right? Because their head is so heavy. So original strength will, through the vestibular system, trigger the reflex, the posture reflex. So then you do this exercise on the floor, which you have to repeat a lot, because a baby practices 2 years to be able to stand the right way.
Right.
So they say that you have to repeat the same movement about from 3,000 to 5,000 times before it becomes a habit, and you get the right triggering of the right muscles at the right time. So it takes a lot of patience, but yes, you do your 10 minutes of rocking and rolling on the floor, then you crawl a little bit. I crawl to the bathroom in my house, or get off bed, and while I'm waking up my kids, I'm rocking on the floor in my all fours. And then you get up and you feel different. And yeah, it truly helps. And for me, it helps for the runners, because if you get the first thing we do in a cheer running workshop is improve people's posture.
See, you sold me already. That's like, I've never been able to find something that focuses on that. My posture is terrible. And I've always been like, I don't know where I went wrong, how I'm going to make this better. But you've definitely sold me on that. So how can people sign up for the workshops? Because you've got a couple coming up, don't you?
Yes, I have a couple coming up. The registration form will be up in my website, www.runwithconstanza.com, soon this week. So it's one in the end of May. And then I'm having a workshop of a 2-hour where I teach people. It's called Press Reset. And in original strength, we call it Press Reset because when you activate your core, all these other muscles that were tight and were overcompensating, and people then get injured, all of a sudden relax. So people that cannot reach the floor with their hands or cannot squat, you do a few exercises on the floor, and then you try and you went down on a squat or you touch the floor. And we call those workshops Press Reset, as if you're resetting your phone that doesn't work. So we press reset on our body. And that would be a 2-hour, 2.5-hour workshop. And then I'm going to follow that up with sessions, weekly sessions. So there's also going to be something that you can come every week, and that is probably going to take place in Oberville.
So go for a run.
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds really, really good.
Now you're gonna make fun of me, but all the stuff you're talking about chi running and stuff, a lot of, whether it's mental or the core things, it's like there should be something for chi golf, because I'm a big golfer. I know, I got to go there.
No idea.
Yes.
No idea. I know, you haven't known. But I'm just listening to all this stuff, and it's like whether it's running or swimming or whatever, like it's all those exercises that you were talking about and the muscles and the memory for golfers, this is ideal.
Yes, and most, you know, from if you're a golfer, you know, you initiate movement from your center.
Yeah. Oh,
you don't. Golfing is not about hands, just as running is not about legs. It's all about our center.
Yeah.
So connecting your center with your core and getting your core to act better. And also it's about practicing, right? Get you the right neuronal pathway to get the right muscles to trigger at the right time.
Mm-hmm. A lot of muscle memory.
So Yeah, so original strength will help in all these things because this is coordination, is right, left, is reconnecting the cross and the gait pattern. And anything that you do, probably if you rock or crawl on the floor before you go practice your golf, you'll be a better golfer.
You go. I like that. I'm going to start crawling.
Yes, crawling is the best exercise you can do. With knees on the floor, and if you want to get a more challenge, with knees off the floor.
What?
On so you hands? Can crawl on your hands and your feet with your knees a tiny bit above the floor. Yeah. So not really like a baby, but... And so there you get like your core. Yeah. But first start with your knees. And then when you get good at it... And then you can do your knees in or your knees out like Spider-Man.
So it's like different ways you can crawl.
Yes. You have the leopard crawl and the Spider-Man crawl. Yeah.
I think we should go and try some crawling.
Yeah, well, obviously you need it because the running part you need to work on. So crawl first, and then next time when you're running for a tram, you won't just spontaneously fall over.
Yeah, and maybe your golf game will be better.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I'll try anything.
Yeah. All right, Constanza, thank you so much for coming and joining us on Swiss Pats.
Thank you.
It has been a pleasure learning about chi running and original strength and your crawling.
Original strength, yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Constanza. That was really, really interesting. If you want any more information about chi running, then check out runwithconstanza.com.
She got me fired up.
Yeah. My knees hurt just thinking about it, but but she's convinced me that they won't for long.
Yeah,
or at all.
She got me fired up. That was really cool. So now we're gonna get off the money and running topic. There's a town here in Switzerland called Appenzell, and if you ever go to this town, they're known for, I believe, cheese, Appenzeller cheese.
Yodeling,
beer. Don't they have Appenzeller beer?
They do. Yes, you're right.
A lot of people in the town still wear the traditional dress.
Just like,
right?
Just down to co-op or?
I think so.
Or like on special occasions.
I don't know. I thought they wore like, there was an area where they wore like the traditional garb.
We will have to go and check it out.
We will. Maybe buy some. But anyway, the cool thing about this town, well, depends on how you look at it. But anyway, they held their annual town meeting on April 30th. And this has been going on for 600 years. And it is the simplest form of democracy you can get. Everyone gets into the main square, okay? And there's guys on stage, like the lawmakers, and they bring a law to the table or a vote to the table, and everybody just raises their hand if they're for or against it.
Right. Like a yes for me, a no for you.
They also elect members of the government, and this year they decided to ban fracking and allocated money for a new hospital. To make sure everyone can attend, public transport is free for the day. The meeting is highly symbolic and steeped in tradition. Now, here's the interesting thing. It was only in 1991 when this canton allowed women to vote.
All right, so they're still a little in the past. They've not moved to ballot voting or secret voting. They're still doing it out in the open. I mean, what if it rains?
Yeah.
I guess it's a quick vote.
It's a quick vote. They're in and out. But this photo they showed on worldradio.ch is pretty cool. There's just as many women as there are men in this photo. And they got their hands up, and it's in a local square. It's, you know, it's pretty cool if you can get past the whole women didn't get to vote until 28
years ago.
Oh, good God.
Or is it 38 years ago?
No, 28.
Maths, not my strong point.
A long time ago.
I can't imagine. I mean, it means you have to all be there at the same time.
Yeah.
This is not some like willy-nilly turn up when I want kind of vote. This is like this, and let's be honest, it's going off on time.
Oh yeah.
That vote is getting called out on time. If you miss it, then that's too bad. Your hand does not count. I can't even imagine voting like that. I can't even imagine. How do they make sure you're, you know, I guess it's 18 is the, your kids would have their hands up.
I wonder what they do if it's close. Like, usually you could tell, like, everybody's for the yes. Okay, there's more yeses than nos. But what if they're sitting up there going, ooh, that looked right down the middle.
Did anyone count? Oh, I forgot.
One, two, three.
Put your hand back up. I've got lactic acid.
Some old lady's holding her hand up. Oh,
I can't imagine that. But yeah, that sounds really nice and a really fun way to kind of vote and get the community out. But clearly it's like the town is steeped in like the past. Like it's not moving forward.
No, they're hanging on to that past, it sounds like, but
they're like, all right, we'll let the women vote.
All right.
Let them out of the laundry for a day. It's back to it.
Yep. I didn't say that, you said that. So before we go, I have a little venting to do.
Oh, I thought you were going to say an announcement.
No. Last Friday, a show that is popular in the West End came to Basel. It's called Thriller Live.
Yeah.
And what this is basically 2.5 hours of Michael Jackson's music.
Right.
As a kid who had an abnormally large head, yet loved to wear the red Thriller jacket when he was like 7 to school and thought he was really cool.
Oh, please find a photo of that.
No, there's no photos of that. Sorry. I was obsessed with Michael Jackson since I can remember, right? Loved his music. And had some issues, but whatever. I was excited to go listen to 2.5 hours of his music. The show is incredible. They have dancers that look like him, singers that sound like him. It's an incredible production. But, there's a but. It was in Switzerland. And the crowd was just not in it.
Oh, is this your first experience of like being at something where...
Yes.
Oh, it's the worst, isn't it?
It is the worst.
It's so funny because I went to the Rocky Horror Picture Show in Basel and the crowd... We were convinced that... Like the night the Swiss were like had their this was the night that they were choosing to let their hair down because people were cheering and whooping and hollering. People were dressed up as Frankenfurter and it was crazy. People were like had noisy things. We were like, these Swiss people, this is crazy.
They're all expats.
No, they weren't. That's the thing. We were like, oh my gosh, they really, really let go for this. And then, yeah, the same people were probably at like, we can't. We cannot sing along. We sung along last week.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the first act was an hour, right? And there's some such good songs. And like all I wanted to do was stand up and dance and sing, right?
You should have. I would have.
So we were like the second to last row on the bottom, right? And there was like two ladies behind us. And two rows in front of me, there was a lady that was told to sit down a couple times by the ladies in front of us because she was up and dancing, enjoying the music, and they wanted her to sit down.
That's so bad.
Right? And so first intermission comes, and I turn to my wife, and I'm like, the show's great, but this crowd sucks. And it got a little bit better in the second act. She turned to me at one point. She's like, well, I understand. It's getting a little bit better. And it was. But you could tell, like...
People were, like, moving in their seat now.
But you could tell, like, the performers were, like, saying, all right, come on, get up, let's go. And, like, they were trying to get the crowd into this. And, like, there were so many opportunities where you could really get into it, and it just was kind of, like, it was falling flat. It did get better toward the end. There was a great... So,
last 5 minutes.
The guy did the whole Billie Jean routine that was incredible. This guy was unbelievable. It felt like I was watching the video. And that was followed by Thriller, where they had the zombies out and stuff. And people finally were getting up. At one point, there was like a, right in the middle section down toward the stage, this guy just basically got up and started dancing. And then like some other people around.
Yeah, then everyone goes behind. Like,
but you could tell where like the season ticket holders are, like in the front, right? Yeah. They were sitting patiently and just kind of enjoying the show and didn't really, they had to be basically cattle prodded to stand up.
Yeah. I mean, I've had that at a blues concert where you think like cheering would be encouraged. Nope, I've been shushed. I've had it when I went and saw Wilco, got told I was too much in people's personal space when there was like meters between us. It is a real thing that happens here. People are a little bit more reserved, and I wonder if it's just like a they're experiencing it in a different way that I just don't get.
I don't get either.
I feel experienced when I'm at something like that by getting involved.
Yeah, getting up and dancing and singing. Yeah. I mean, it's Michael Jackson songs. That's what they're 90% of them are all about. And it was like, very interesting. It's so
disappointing when something is like a show is good, but like the crowd was tough. It was a tough crowd.
Yeah, it was.
I feel for you.
Still a good time. Anyway, that does it.
Now you know for next time.
Now I know for next time. Just go to the West End and watch it.
No, just get the last row. Then there's no one behind. You can do what you want.
It's true. That is a good idea. I like that. I'll keep that in mind. There's a Beatles show coming in November that I definitely want to see.
There you go.
And I'll definitely be just big of a dork for that. So I will get the last row. So
let's go and we'll compare. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Well, anyway, that does it for another edition of Swiss Pats. As always, you could check us out on Apple Podcasts, at SwissPats.com, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're on all the places. Come check us out. Leave a comment. Subscribe. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. We'd like to thank Costanza for coming on. That was great. We got some more interviews coming up in the weeks to come. So for Susie, I'm Don. Have a good week.